Good evening, folks, and welcome to another edition of the Trinity Tims. Well, there isn't a Trinity tonight. I'm just joined by my colleague Joe McHugh from Video Celts, and obviously I'm Eric Knott from Reed Celtic. James Forrest is AWOL. We just don't know where James is. He has disappeared off the face of the earth. Last we heard, he was somewhere in Inverness, and he has not been seen or heard from since he disappeared into Inverness. So we don't know. We don't know where James is. So James, if you're out there, you know, we're plugging for you here. We're plugging for you. We just hope that everything's okay and that you resurface somewhere and that you might even show up on the show this evening. It'd be great. But for now, we have to plow on without you. You know, the old show must go on. As you can probably hear, folks, my voice is gone for obvious reasons. I'm sick as a parrot today. Excuse the pun. After Dry Parrot's heroics yesterday for the Republic of Ireland, there was a lot of pints drank yesterday and a lot of voices like mine today. And what about Liam Scales? He was the man who jumped highest at the end, and without his header, I don't think the Republic of Ireland would be going into their World Cup playoff now. But in fairness, it was a serious turnaround and a serious turnaround in Ireland's fortunes after what happened in the early parts of the campaign. But it was good to see Johnny Canny get his debut yesterday as well. And what better kind of atmosphere and circumstances to get a debut on. Obviously, as I said, I'm a little bit hungover and I've lost my voice. Well, I've retained some of it, but this morning I was completely hoarse. You couldn't hear anything. So some of it's come back. But as we say, the show must go on and we have to talk all things Celtic. We're just hearing the news this evening that the Wilfred Nancy trail has gone cold. So, well, we don't know exactly what's happening, but we've been told that Martin O'Neill will be in the dugout for the St. Mirren game. And is that a case of will Nancy be announced at the AGM and then possibly be in place later on after that, possibly next week? Hard to know. But I think there's a lot of mixed feelings about the pursuit of Nancy. It seems to be a lot of people are saying that it's very much Paul Tisdale's man, that Paul Tisdale had connections with Nancy, and that it's him that's he's the driving force behind getting Wilfred Nancy into the club. So we will just have to wait and see how this pans out. But you begin to wonder, is it going cold? Is the trail going cold? Because there was a report in The Guardian on Saturday where they said that Nancy would be willing to work with Celtic's 20-year-old outdated archaic policies. I find that hard to believe. And again, if I'm just shooting the breeze, I could say that maybe this has gone cold or the trail has gone cold because he's not willing to adhere to a policy like that one. So I'll pass over to Joe and I'll see what Joe's thoughts are on it. Obviously, it's kind of getting all mixed up now. We don't know exactly what's happening. So, Joe, what do you think is the whole situation? Well, I mean, what do you think of the situation to begin with anyway, if we are to go with him? Well, James is here.
Oh, special guest appearance.
Yep.
Is he coming in?
Is he coming in? Well, we can add him to the stage anyway. There he is.
Oh, yeah. Nearly. Near miss.
Hey, guys. How are we?
How are we doing, James?
We've not got you tonight, unfortunately.
We've not got your boys' good looks.
And I don't know why it won't bloody work, but it's not working for some reason. I tried it on the wee laptop thing and all, it's not working, so...
Okay. Well, which is good to know you're safe, because we were wondering. we were wondering had you disappeared down somewhere up in the Highlands. We got lost.
No, could you try and get us to work? I don't know what the hell's the matter with it. I don't know why the camera's not working. It should be, but it ain't. I don't know.
Meanwhile, back at the ranch, it looks like a Celtic transfer target the way this one's getting strung along. So it was somebody off the radar, someone that just does not seem a Celtic manager, brought in, mentioned very, very early on in the speculation about who's going to take over as manager. Surprise, one of Celtic's favoured media outlets got the full story on Friday afternoon. Talks were at an advanced stage. It was almost done and dusted. They even pushed out quotes from Austin Trusty about what a fantastic deal this was going to be. But lo and behold, just like the transfer, just like all those attempts to sign wingers and strikers during the summer, it seems to fall down in negotiations. So there's umpteen possibilities about it. Noel say he could have got cold feet about it. He might feel the timing's not right. Celtic might have, well, when I say Celtic, we all know what that means. Dermot Desmond might have got a concern about it. I don't know, no one knows whether Dermot Desmond has the face-to-face meeting with Wilfred Nancy. The process, anyone putting two and two together, putting the pieces together, it's a Paul Tisdale appointment. Paul Tisdale thinks that Nancy is the greatest thing since sliced bread, and he's the man to put onto the pitch all the fantastic work that Paul Tisdale's doing. But for whatever reasons, that's not going to, it's not happening straight away. And if he's backing off, if Celtic are backing off, the fixtures from Saturday are just getting ridiculous. There is not an easy time to slot him in. If Celtic were appointing a permanent manager, then a fortnight between, nice cup. If Celtic were appointing a permanent manager, it should have been done last Monday so that they had as much minutes as possible to prepare for St Mirren, Feyenoord, Hibs away. I mean, that's a tough run of fixtures, but they did get it done last Monday. News leaked out to Daily Record on Friday, and then late on Monday, they're saying that nothing's quite happening. James, I think there's a guest behind you. You better be careful. did you hear me? So it's a typical Celtic production. They shouldn't have been leaking the story to their friends at the Daily Record on Friday, because that makes them look more silly. And it's going to be very difficult to find a manager now if Nancy doesn't fancy this. It'd be crazy to come to Celtic. Anyone would. It's the worst possible time. You've got a very imbalanced squad. You've got a bad run of injuries. You've got a horrific run of fixtures coming up. And you've got supporters that are very angry and resentful about everything that's going on inside the club. So it's a job for a real firefighter. And I don't, not Nancy's not that. He could become a great manager somewhere. I think France or Belgium might be his sort of place. But coming into Glasgow, is very different. Coming to Celtic, the expectations, it's a terrible time to be coming to Celtic. And anyone that's comparing him to Ange Postecoglou, there's very little comparison. It's somebody coming from outside Europe, and beyond that, there's not much to it. Nancy only became a manager full-time on his own during COVID. So COVID is still quite fresh. We can remember that too vividly. Neil Lennon was in charge of Celtic when Nancy started becoming a manager. So he's got very little experience. And whatever's happening, I would think most folk would say it's not ideal, but Martin O'Neill and Sean Maloney in whatever time span is better than bringing in a project manager in mid-season with the current conditions at Celtic. But I suspect James doesn't agree with very much of that, so we'll let him in on it.
I'm not completely sold on it. I'm not worried.
James, your audio.
What's the matter?
It's horrendous. You sound like a Dalek.
It's very garbled. And it was okay at the start before you put your camera on.
But it was audio only, it was fine. Try audio only.
Yeah, just chancing at you a lot. Not that in there.
Nope.
Jesus Christ.
Maybe log out and come back in audio only. No. It does prove it's live.
Yeah, this is true. No, any better?
No.
You don't have a set of headphones by any chance, no?
Right, I'll be back in 2 minutes, right? I will do my best to put on as quick as possible.
Eric, are you as cynical as me then on the motives for bringing in Wilfred Nancy and the way Celtic are going about their business?
Yeah, I am. I'm pretty cynical about the whole situation in general. I think this is, you know, the operative word here is project. And Celtic seems to love projects. We all know how much Celtic loves projects. And this whole Nancy thing to me seems like a project. It seems like the board are desperately looking for somebody who can fit into their way of doing things. And that's the main concern that I have, that Nancy is, like, we all know that this transfer system that the club has, this transfer strategy that the club has, is broken. We know this. We also know that the main reason that the Celtic fans are in uproar and the Celtic fans collective has been created is because we're off the back of such a poor transfer window in the summer just gone. So the reality is that we just can't use this sort of transfer model going forward, because it's clear now, it's crystal clear now, it doesn't work. And to expect a manager to come in and to fit into that way of doing things, which, as we've read in the media, these seem to be the rumors going around. It's concerning, because the fan base wants change. And it's clear that the board is just going to plow on, well, namely Dermot Desmond, who seems to be very much pulling the strings at the moment. He's the one who's determined to plow on with the way things have always been, regardless of what the fans think and regardless of what the fans want to do. So that's the main concern for me. I think that, you know, somebody like Wilfred Nancy coming in might have a chance if he had control over transfers himself, similar to what Ange Postecoglou had when Ange, you know, came into the club. But a lot of people are trying to lean towards the Ange Postecoglou comparison. You have to bear in mind that Ange Postecoglou, when he came to Celtic, was a serial winner. He had won championships in Australia. He had won the Asian championships with Australia. He had won a lot at underage level with Australia. He had won titles in Japan. And he just had a consistent track record over a 25-year period of being a winner. He just hadn't that level in Europe. And Celtic obviously was his first club in Europe. And lo and behold, he became a serial winner at Celtic as well. But a big part of the success of Ange Postecoglou's time at Celtic was being allowed to bring in his own players in conjunction with
Frank Trimboli.
Frank Trimboli, when he came in first, and obviously Don McKay, pulling the strings in as CEO of the club at the time. And we all know what happened. There was a tranche of players brought in who fit in exactly into the system that Ange Postecoglou wanted. A lot of those players' values soared in a very short period of time. And as we all know, the majority of that squad that Ange Postecoglou had this time 3 years ago is gone. It's decimated. It's been sold off and stripped for parts. Which leaves us in the position now where we feel that Dermot Desmond wants to take the club forward with this archaic transfer policy that we have, and which the Celtic collective and the fans in general are pushing for change. And it's not just change in the transfer, you know, the transfer policies. It's change across the board. It's just the whole operational strategy of the club is broken. It's broken down. And for me, I just feel that there seems to be no realization. It's a case of plow on regardless. And the fact now that Martin O'Neill is taking that might just be that negotiations are protracted and dragging on. But it's also makes you think, is it a case of Nancy himself is saying, no, I'm not interested in this. You know, I need to have autonomy on player transfers. I need to be able to bring who I want to bring into the club to fit into my strategy. And I'd be concerned. I'm concerned about it in general. On the overall, you know, on an overall basis, I'm just concerned about the whole thing. I wouldn't be so concerned if he had autonomy. And he was allowed to bring in his own players, put forward his own ideas. But if he's having players foisted on him by the football doctor or whoever it is, and he's told work with these guys and these guys don't work, it's going to be a disaster. How does that sound doing now, James?
Don't know. You tell me. Is it sounding any better?
It's perfect. So now, come on, give us your opinion on Wilfred Nancy.
I'm not against the idea. I'm not completely sold on it either, but I'm not against it. I can see what the idea behind it is. And it looks more like a football decision than anything else that we're likely to see. It looks like the football department making a football decision. And if that's the case, I can get behind it completely. I'll accept it on that basis rather than let this board of directors pick another manager, which will be a disaster. But my real concern is that they don't seem to think that there's any hurry here. They seem to think that they can drag their feet. I mean, I can't believe it's taken this long since Rodgers resigned for them to get around to interviewing people. I mean, how long have they known that this was in the pipe? They must have known that either they were going to have to take some action against Rodgers themselves or that Rodgers might walk because the situation was getting untenable. So they must have had a fair idea that this was coming. And they're not, to me, they don't really seem to have had any real sense of urgency about it. And my concern is that with O'Neill and Maloney in the dugout, and most people reasonably happy with that, that they won't feel any sense of urgency if the Nancy deal collapses or if they can't quite get it out of the wind straight away. I don't think they'll rush. I don't think they'll take their time. And I think that the more time we waste, the deeper the shit we're in come the summer. I just want somebody in the door. If this is who the football department thinks it should be, then we should just accept it and get on with it. The one thing that's absolutely unacceptable is for us to drag this out for very much longer. And I think they might try. That's where I'm really worried.
James, you're talking about the football department. The football department seems to be Paul Tisdale, a guy that had 602 games managing Exeter City and short, unsuccessful spells at Stevenage and Bristol Rovers. There's good reason to be very, very concerned that someone...
I still trust these guys more than I trust bean counters, accountants and lawyers. I certainly don't trust those guys to make a football decision. I don't think they know what they're doing.
Neither do I, but
this guy has more experience and more know-how about the sport and what's involved in team building and squad building than they will ever know in a million years.
I'll 100% agree with that, but it doesn't say to me that Paul Tisdale is qualified or has the know-how, has the contacts to bring in the guy that's going to be the right manager for Celtic. The reason he's going for this guy is Nancy and his assistant are probably the management team that's going to be most agreeable to the policies of Paul Tisdale.
If he thinks that, he's not done his homework, because this guy is not that kind of guy at all. He's already quit working at one club because of interference for directors. And he told the directors of Columbus Crew that their transfer targets weren't necessarily going to be the guys he would sign, and he didn't sign any of them. So if they think that they're getting some kind of yes man here, they're dead wrong. I mean, whatever kind of manager he is, his history has shown that he is certainly not that. So they're barking up the wrong tree. And my concern, of course, is that if they find that out and they decide not to get it on with the deal, that they'll just go, well, we have a manager and we have an assistant manager. And, you know, people see management, we'll just leave it.
Yeah, this is what we've discussed. I mean, we've been saying this has been our major worry, that this is what's going to happen, that the whole situation is just going to drag out and out, and we're going to be left with Martin O'Neill and Sean Maloney till the end of the season. And then we're looking at a deja vu of the whole Eddie Howe pursuit. Yeah. And where we're going through a situation where we might have a manager, but we're not sure whether he's going to come or 100%. He has said, you know, he's given a firm commitment that he will come, but he's given us nothing in writing and so on and so forth. Yeah. We're just going down that. This is the thing about Celtic. We live through deja vus of the same shit over and over again. And this whole process is very much smacking of that. It's starting to get more and more concerning.
They'll take it. And my concern with that would be that, I mean, we lose January for a start. That's a disaster, I think. If we lose January and the chance to make some progress in the squad in the January window, that's a disaster. But the real disaster is waiting for us in the summer. If they're happy enough to let O'Neill and Maloney see out the season, the real disaster is in the summer, because they won't even start looking until they guys have cleared their desks. And they probably won't even start looking until the Vasty guys, if they'd be willing to stay for another year. And that could drag on for weeks. And by the time they actually get around to starting to look for a manager where Champions League qualifiers are breathing down our necks, and there's no time to sign new players. There's no time to bed in the squad. It's just, you can see this on my own. It's just...
This is the concern. It's
watching this happening again.
This, again, smacks of short-termism. There's no long-term thinking about the repercussions of dragging this out and what damage it's going to do come the summertime. If we had a strategy of any kind, this is what we'd be thinking about. This is what we'd have in mind. And, I mean, Joe, they're talking that they were, you know, obviously there's rumours going around that they were down in London interviewing candidates. But interviewing candidates, I mean, what candidates? Did Kjetil Knudsen come to London? I don't think so. There has been no contact, apparently, to Nancy. Our rumours were at the weekend that there was no formal contact made to Nancy. So Nancy didn't come to London. And who's the other candidate that was rumoured to be interested? Or they were rumoured to be interested in?
McKenna mentions, but that was never happened.
Listen, the second that we heard there was a £5 million release clause for McKenna, there was no way he was ever going to get an interview.
But sure, the guy's on silly money anyway. I mean, he's on £6 million a year at Ipswich. I mean, that's just... You think he's going to take even if they were to bring him in on the same kind of wages that Brendan Rodgers was on, which was £3 million a year, like, do you think he's going to cut his, you know, oh, I'm going up to Celtic, I'm going up to a huge club now, but I'll cut my wages in half to do that because I love Celtic so much, I want to come up for half the wage. He's not going to do that. Especially, and he's not stupid, he can see what turmoil the club is in. So, yeah,
Brendan Rodgers had his first phone call when he would have asked Brendan, what exactly is it like up there?
Absolutely.
What's it like to work for these people? And that would have been it.
Yeah, and this is what we talked about at the time. When Rodgers left, we said it, that any prospective candidate was going to be on the phone to Rodgers wanting to know what it was like. And that, you don't even want to know what that conversation is going to entail, you know?
No one credible is going to look at the Celtic job in the current circumstances, and the people that would want it aren't qualified for it. We folk are out of work just now. Yeah, I'll give it a go. I'll come in. I'll give it a try. I want Celtic on my CV. Yeah, I'll turn things around. But there's no easy option. And as I said earlier, it's a perfect storm. The state of the squad, the injuries, the fixtures, and the fan discontent. You'd need to be very, very desperate or ridiculously self-confident to think that, yep, I'll go up there and I'll turn things around. I'll give them a success and they'll be grateful for me and it'll do my career a lot of good. It's not going to do anyone's career any good coming into Celtic just now. And that's possibly true for Martin O'Neill as well.
That was the other side of the Nancy argument. People were arguing that, you know, oh, this guy, he'll see it as the biggest opportunity he's ever had and he'll not be able to turn it down. I'm thinking, that guy will get a job in a top European, maybe not a top European club right away, right? But a top five league club will come and offer that guy a job.
Mid-table French side.
The next 12 months, 24 months, right? It's almost certain that that's going to happen. And he's not coming here to ruin his reputation. If he, if he gets told your transfer policy or you take the players that we sign you, he's not going to do that. Nobody's going to do that. Nobody who values their own reputation is going to come and do that.
Yeah. I'm looking at this comment here on the screen from Stephen Doherty saying, oh, for fuck's sake, you're saying they didn't interview people because you don't know. Do you just wake up and think, what can I slag about Celtic about today? No, I don't wake up and think what I can slag Celtic about today. Well, I live in the real world.
Nancy's in the US, so he never got interviewed.
Yeah.
Nixon's not left Norway, so he's not been interviewed either. So we can take two of the main candidates the press have been talking about after this. I don't believe that the Bruce manager was in London over the last week either. So
yeah. So, I mean, like, we live in the real world. We're not slagging Celtic. We do not slag Celtic. We slag, and it's not even slag. We criticise the people who run Celtic because Celtic is in shit at the moment. And if you can't see that, then you're not paying attention.
The London story last week just didn't add up. Sky Sports News, breaking news. Celtic have been interviewing candidates in London. There's no mention of who the candidates were, and there's no mention of who was doing the interviewing. So,
And do you not think that if any candidates, prospective candidates, would be caught on camera?
Not a single leak.
Yeah. So
that's amazing in itself. It's not as if these are not well-known people. So, you know, I mean, if they were interviewing a candidate and the candidate's even well-known at all, then that would have leaked. There'd be a story. There's none. So I don't know.
Yeah. So, yeah, it looks like the Muppet Show again.
Really. I mean, they said that the Ibrox club appointed two managers by Skype. I mean, I think Pedro Cassinia got his job on the back of one interview done online.
It wasn't Ange Postecoglou. He was appointed on Skype.
Ange done one interview on Skype, that's right.
Yeah. No. Ange had an interview with Dermot Desmond, and then Dermot Desmond put him in touch with Dom Mackay and Bankier and the people at Celtic. Then he did another one with Dermot Desmond that was completed. But
you mean so Peter Lawler was talking about obscurity? Was what often told.
Not a chance.
Okay, guys. Well,
yep.
We could stay on the whole managerial train for the rest of the podcast, but like we'll finish up on this. I put this question to both of you. I'll start with you, Joe. What is your prediction for the turn of the year? Are we going to have a manager in place before the turn of the year or not?
I don't think we'll have a permanent manager in place. I'll 100% say we'll not have a good manager in place. We'll either have we'll have Martin O'Neill and Sean Maloney doing it week by week, month by month, or we'll go for a complete left field candidate. But I really just the circumstances, repeating myself, perfect storm. The circumstances at Celtic right now, I can't see you getting a permanent manager in place.
How about you, James? What's your take on that? What do you think?
I can see circumstances where we go away, O'Neill and Maloney at the end of the season. It's the worst case scenario. Far worse than hiring a management team who turned out not to be very good. Because it's time that the people who ran our club made some decisions that we can judge them on. And this isn't one of the decisions. I mean, I'm reading bullshit in the paper today about this being a Dermot Desmond masterstroke. Let me repeat what I've said on here and in the blog several times over the last couple of weeks. Dermot Desmond did fuck all here. All he did was pull the name out of his book. Had they been in charge of the situation, had they been forced to make a decision, Brendan Rodgers would still be manager. If Brendan Rodgers had not quit, they would not have sacked him, and we would still be in the position of having Brendan Rodgers in the dugout, and we'd still be speculating about who we might get in the summer. This wasn't a Dermot Desmond masterstroke. This whole process is a joke. It sums up the way our club is run. And yeah, I'm very, very worried that we won't have a permanent manager by New Year. I'm very worried that we won't have a permanent manager till the summer, if we even bother then.
Yeah, that about sums it up. In reality, it's not looking good. And the longer the whole duo of Martin O'Neill and Sean Maloney drag on, the more antsy, worried, head up fans are going to get. Which brings me along to the Celtic Fans Collective and their latest campaign against the board. Joe, I'll go to you first. What do you think of the campaign that is going on at the moment, calling out the board members and telling them that their time is up? It started with Tom Allison? Brian Wilson first. Yeah, Tom Allison second, and now it's gone on to Sharon Brown. Do you feel that this is an effective continuation of the protests that the collective are organising?
It's effective in that it highlights the issues and brings it to supporters' attention. It's not going to make the slightest difference to Friday's AGM. None of them are going to say, I'll read that in the collective and, yep, I'm contributing hee-haw to Celtic. I'm not justifying my £40,000 a year salary, the expenses and all the jollies across Europe that I enjoy. So it's perfect. It's very good by the collective. It's precise. It's targeted. All these people are up for re-election. They'll all get through on 95, 96, 97% of the votes. It's ridiculous. But the collective are doing a decent job of raising awareness and letting people know the issues. And for those outside of Celtic, it's nothing to do with the manager. It's nothing particularly to do with the transfer window. It's about the whole way the club's run. what was it? Tom Allison was a non-executive director when Martin O'Neill was there the first time. Brian Wilson joined a couple of weeks after Martin O'Neill left. So if you think of the amount of changes at Celtic since Martin O'Neill left in 2005, there's been so many phases, so many eras, all sorts. I mean, there's been tons and tons going on. But for some reason, these guys, it should be there for between 5 and 8 years. They're just always there. They're remaining there. So, and lots of people saying, oh, there's going to be changes and changes are happening. This one's going to resign. But there's no evidence of that. And they're all up for re-election. So unless they're all, some of them are going to take cold feet on Thursday night, Friday morning, decide to withdraw from that process. I suspect next week when we're having this podcast, they'll all still be in place. So well done, the collective. It's good. They're raising awareness. They're pointing at the targets. But it'll have no immediate effect. It's not going to change much.
And what's your feeling on it, James? Do you think it, like Joe, do you reflect that? Do you think that it's a very well thought out campaign? It does raise awareness. But do you feel that it's ineffective in the overall scheme of things?
No, I think it could be very effective in the long term. I think that there's a lot of Celtic fans who don't realise how long some of these people have been sucking the life out of this club. I mean, one of our frequent contributors, if we're calling him that, has actually posted tonight, Brian Wilson bleeds Celtic. He goes home and away, never misses a game. I totally agree that he bleeds Celtic. He's been bleeding Celtic for a long time like a fucking leech. But as for going home and away, the difference between Brian Wilson and somebody like my old man, for example, right, is that my old man pays to follow Celtic and Brian Wilson gets paid to follow Celtic. That's the difference. That's what we mean when we say he bleeds Celtic. That's the actual literal definition of the term. These guys have been in place for, as you say, 20 odd years, some of them. And that's just ridiculous. I mean, will you tell me what fresh ideas these people are contributing after 20 odd years? It's farcical. These guys shouldn't be anywhere near a modern football board of directors. They do not have a clue. So, I mean, I'm really pissed off with the whole lot of them. And I think that what the collective is doing and highlighting how long these people have been there is not just valid in the here and now, but will pay dividends later on. Because people have to realise how untenable this is.
Yeah, well, I mean, my take on it is that one thing I have to say, which I'm very impressed that the collective are doing, it's almost like an information campaign.
Yeah,
they're raising awareness of, you know, there might be an awful lot of people out there who have joined the collective because yes, they want change, but they don't fully understand the depths of, you know, how long this has been going on, how long these people have been involved on the board, and how normal football clubs generally tend to stick to the 5 to 6 year cycles for directors and non-executive directors and so on and so forth. And I think it's a fantastic tool to raise awareness amongst the fan base of what's going on in terms of the length of time that these people have been at the club. So, this every bit of information that the collective puts out is raising awareness. It's making people more and more aware of how farcical things are at the club and how much it needs change. Fair dues to the collective. I'm impressed with it myself as well. And while, as Joe says, it might not make a whole pile of difference in the short term, it's building awareness in the long term.
Yeah.
So we'll move on to our next subject for tonight. And James, you did quite a detailed article on this today. And obviously, I want to talk about this particular man because of what he did last night in Budapest. So I'll go to you first, James, on this one. Have we really been underestimating Liam Scales? Have we really started the emergence of a player that has the ability to make big money for Celtic down the line? I'm sure there's lots to go argue with us. And obviously I'm being biased a bit because I'm Irish and what he did yesterday and what he did on Thursday night against Portugal. But do we have the makings of a really big, big defender? Dare I say it,
it's really frustrating, this one, because sometimes it does take somebody who's a bit of an outsider to Rub your face in the obvious, right? And Matt O'Reilly's no an outsider any longer. He's part of the family now, regardless of the fact he's no longer here. And I thought his comments were excellent. And it made me think a lot about it. Because I remember Scales said, Dean, just before the Ibrox game, and I did this big long article on him about the trial by fire. And I said, if this guy proves himself in this fight, he'll never need to prove himself again. And he was immense that day, and we won that day, and a lot of the credit went to him, and a lot of the credit went to the manager for picking him. But he's never been quite accepted, and it doesn't seem to matter what he does in a Celtic strip. He's never quite made it to the point where a lot of fans consider him as a Celtic first team regular and as somebody who deserves to wear the jersey. And at times he drives me nuts. At times he absolutely drives me nuts. And I have written several times that there has to be a better central defender out there than Liam Scales within what we can afford. But that brings the core question back as to how good is Liam Scales and whether or not this guy is a better player than a lot of us have given credit for. He's certainly more respected outside Celtic Park than he is by a lot of your supporters, which is mental. I don't know. I can't think of a player, except maybe for Greg Taylor, who over and over and over again proved he deserved to be in the Celtic team, who gets criticised every time his name appears on a team sheet. And I can only remember a handful of games where he's been truly, absolutely, dreadfully bad, and where you could say that he was to blame for some terrible thing that happened in the game. There aren't enough of them for you to write the guy off. And yet the number of games where he's been absolutely exceptional against really good sides, yet to yourself, maybe O'Reilly sees it more clearly than we do. And that's why I wrote that piece today. Because for a guy who I said, you'll never have to prove yourself again if you get through this fixture, he's hit today ever since. And no matter what he's done, it's never been enough. It's mad. Yeah, it's kind of mad. Yeah.
And I suppose when you look at his career path at Celtic, I mean, I think, to be fair, he has done everything right in terms of the way he came in from Shamrock Rovers. Celtic sent him out on loan to Aberdeen, and he flourished at Aberdeen. He played regular first-team football, and then he came back. And when he came back, he was shown... I mean, we all know at that time there was, Aberdeen had serious interest in taking him there on a permanent basis.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
And it was only for the fact that Celtic were so badly strapped with injuries going into Ibrox in 2024. Early 2023, wasn't it? And when we won that game 1-0, and he was fantastic in that game. And he was just thrown in at the deep end with Lagerby Elk that day. And he just seemed to push on from there and flourish, you know. And like you said, he's only had a handful of games that I can remember. We would have to say the 3-0 loss at Ibrox last January was probably one of his poorer performances. But then again, nobody got past Mark Strachan really in that game. It wasn't just him. It was just the fact that he was the guy who had the most possession and most passes in that game. And he was the guy who was pushing too far forward, which made him a bomb scare, and a lot of people were concerned about that. But Joe, what's your feeling on it? I mean, are you still on the fence? Do you think Scales is a guy who's destined for greatness, or he's just going to be a solid centre-back for Celtic and that's it?
I don't think he's destined for greatness. He's not going to follow Virgil van Dijk to Liverpool via Southampton. But he's damn good, and he's about as good as we're going to get. I think most supporters have just got an image, a perception of him from 2022, 2023, and he's okay, he's a backup, and he came from Shamrock Rovers. I think Bristol Rovers were the only team that were interested in him, apart from Celtic. True. And again, it was a Dermot Desmond sort of deal. Dermot Desmond's got a stake in Shamrock Rovers. He held off joining Celtic so he could play in Conference League qualifiers for Shamrock Rovers. So, I don't think there's much of a fanfare for his arrival. People were probably surprised to get any games. And then when he went to Aberdeen, that seemed a bit as good as it would get. Jim Goodwin advanced his career a bit. I think it was Goodwin and then possibly Barry Robson. But yeah. And again, the horrendous summer of 2023 when we signed up Naroki, Lager, Bielke, then ended up trying to get bringing in Nat Phillips for cover when Scales was there. But Scales wasn't part of the plan. But what was it? Carter Vickers got injured at Pittodrie in the second league game. Stephen Welsh, that was another of the injuries. Stephen Welsh did his ankle pretty seriously the day before the Kilmarnock match. And then the League Cup tie at Kilmarnock when we lost. Naroki pulled some muscle injury late on. And lo and behold, we turned up at Ibrox with Scales and Lager Bielke. But equally, 2019, we had a defence at Ibrox. What was it? Maurice Bauer at right back, Julian and Beaton at left back, Julian and Beaton central defence, and Ball and goalie at left back. So
that's right.
The secret to success at Ibrox is to throw together a defence at the last minute. but barely, Fraser Foster was in goals. I think that might be Fraser Foster's first game back after coming in loan. So
no, he had played against Livingston, I think, at home.
Possibly one match, but he'd been brought in late in the day towards the end of the window after another Champions League failure, this time to Cluj. But getting back to Liam Scales, he's doing very well. Some folk just would say he's not a superstar. He's not, I don't think he's top half EPL. I think another thing's overlooked is fitness. He's barely injured, touching wood.
That's right. Sure.
He's probably the Celtic player in the longest run. I should shut up now. The longest run without being injured. If you look around the squad, most guys have had an injury. Since, I can't recall Scales. No, he got a broken jaw, I think, was it last year at St Mirren? I'm pretty sure it was a broken jaw. Basically, he's had one injury, and we're fortunate to have him because he's reliable, he's left-sided, he's got limitations, but he's steady and he's brave. And if you saw the way he celebrated Troy Parrott's third goal yesterday, he's a guy that's got 100% commitment. And it's something I always notice in the Ireland team. I reckon playing for Ireland is a priority for most of their players. Scales got a decent club career, but for most of the Ireland players, there are ups and downs at their clubs, but Ireland's a consistent for them. And the celebrations yesterday was pretty special. So Scales is committed, and it would be nice if folk got off his back a little bit. He's not great, he's not Van Dijk, but he's a pretty good defender. And when he's gone, we might miss him or we might notice him. But he's more than steady and reliable. He's got the big match temperament. And again, if you saw his celebrations at Hampden when Callum Osmond scored, that meant a lot to him. Rolson was in amongst those celebrations as well. These guys get a tough time of it, and when they're gone, it'll be big shoes to fill.
I'd agree with that. I think he's just a guy who goes about his business quietly. He doesn't make a fuss, you know. And I think probably half the reason that people don't recognise how good he is because he's a quiet kid. He's not one of these guys who blows his own trumpet. He's very modest. Even when he's interviewed, when you see him in any interviews, he's very modest in the way that he speaks. He's a very down-to-earth guy. So as Joe pointed out, 100%, you can see how much he cares, what it means to him. And you could see what it meant to him yesterday. And again, that was a good shout there, Joe, saying, you know, his reaction to Callum Osmond as well. I think he's the kind of guy who likes to see the up-and-coming underdog players doing well, and I'm sure he's plugging for Johnny Kenny as well, like, you know. So, he's a good kid all around, and, you know, he's definitely, you know, he's in with a shout for player of the season so far anyway. We won't say if he stays the course, but he's definitely been one of our outstanding players so far this season. I'll give him that much anyway, you know. So we leave it at that.
I used to say something quite unfair, and it may be quite unfair. I don't know about David Turnbull. I had a weird thing about David Turnbull. I used to watch David Turnbull and wonder when he was going to stop being David Turnbull, the ex-Motherwell player, and become David Turnbull, the Celtic player. And unfortunately, he never quite got there. But Liam Scales is definitely a Celtic player. Liam Scales, isn't he? Ex-Shamrock Rovers. He's grown into the jersey and he looks like he belongs in the jersey. And I'll tell you what else about him. For everybody who has maintained that Rodgers never improved any player, there is Exhibit A for you straight away. The proof that this proves the lie.
Yeah, 100%. I'd have to agree with that. So we move on. Next Friday, we have the AGM. Is it going to be explosive or is it going to be a damp squib? Now, Joe's always our inside man for the AGM. So I'm going to go over to Joe and I'm going to ask Joe, what's he got up his sleeve? Are you going to give us a little bit of insight of the howitzers you're going to fire at the board members or what's on the agenda?
I think I'll be concentrating my fire on the SFA and referees. I think that's one area that Michael Nicholson will be very weak in. So if you're watching, Michael, look forward to Friday. You can have the chairman have a go at me, first of all. But one other thing for Friday is Nicholson's favourite tactic is when he's asked a question is to deflect it and throw it to someone else. He likes to throw a question to the manager. He likes to throw a question to Chris Mackay and anything financial, but I don't want to hear a word from them. All I want to hear is the tones of Michael Nicholson. So we haven't discussed this, but the VAR review on Friday was an absolute shambles.
Absolutely.
Four Celtic incidents weren't covered, Michael. I don't know if Michael Nicholson bothered watching the VAR review. He's probably too excited, looking forward to three Old Firm games between January and September. But there was nothing whatsoever about the VAR decision on Raskin's own goal. It wasn't touched on. And yet, for the St Mirren-Hibs game, Willie Coleman went into great detail. Michael Stewart's been heavily involved in this. And lo and behold, the VAR lines are most certainly manual lines put together by Andrew Dallas. So Dallas was in charge at Hampden. Dallas was in charge of the St Mirren and Hibs game. And fortunately, he came to the right decision, but he applied the wrong lines initially, and that's what Michael Stewart got into a bit of bother about. So it'd be nice to know Celtic's thoughts on the officiating at Hampden. Celtic won, and that's the time to make complaints and criticism. So that's one area, but there's so many areas. Club communications, scouting, European progress, Champions League club, etc., etc. But I don't think it'll be explosive. I've no idea what the collective are planning to do. The collective and the Celtic Trust, they'll make some good points. And Michael Nicholson will probably say, yes, we'll listen to them. We'll take them on board. Yes, we'll consider that. And we'll get back to you on it, all those sort of things. So it'll be the usual flannel. But I think there'll be a few decent jabs thrown at the boards and say, Nicholson might drop his guard and say something silly or just shrug his shoulders when he's asked about club signing. So it'll be similar to most AGMs, but there's a bit more edge to it. There's no manager. The club's struggling a fair bit in comparison to previous seasons. So it'll be interesting. It's a day I always look forward to. They hide for 364 days of the year, but on AGM day for about 45, 50 minutes, possibly an hour, there's a chance to ask some questions. There'll be some silly old fools telling you their life story and being down their hands and knees, forever grateful for Peter Lille for giving them the best days of their life, etc., etc. But there will be some meaningful questions. There's so much to ask Michael Nicholson, and he's got so little to offer. But
he's not called Silent Mike for no reason, you know. So I mean, it's to see if he can be made to squirm on Friday and break the silence.
So after Friday, we won't hear from him for another year. I mean, again, the Martin O'Neill announcement today, and when Martin O'Neill and Sean Maloney came in as the interim management team, they were on their own. There's no sign of Michael Nicholson telling anyone what was going on. So The last time we heard from Michael Nicholson was June 2023, when he announced he was part of three people alongside Peter Lille and Brendan Rodgers for the appointment of Rodgers as a manager. And James, maybe that's why we don't get another permanent manager, because Michael Nicholson's got to speak at the media conference for it. But there's my Tuppenceworth. I'll throw the microphone your direction for your thoughts on the AGM.
The AGM is going to be like... It's going to be like a show without the main event. Because the main character's not going to be there. He's not going to be. He might send his son, but I don't know if Ross Desmond's ever said a word at the AGM.
Never.
I don't think he's ever uttered a single syllable. He and Nicholson should get along then. It'd be like that Father Ted episode with that boring priest that comes and never talks. you guys know how I feel about it. I know why you want to go, Joe. I know why other people want to go. I know why my old man's gone. And a bunch of other people I know are going to go, because they want to look these people in the face and they want to make them squirm a bit and see them squirm a bit. But it really is a sort of pointless exercise now that Desmond has had his wee Rogers rant and basically set aside who actually runs the show. And he's made it clear that he runs the show and that these are just placemen. So unless the decision maker's going to be in the room, then the whole thing is just a worthless event. Because you can ask Nicholson all the questions you want, but these guys will only answer the questions that they're allowed to answer, and they'll only answer them the way they're allowed to answer them. I really don't know why they got so upset with you last year, Joe, because your question last year was a perfectly legitimate question. We hired a guy at great expense, and I've no doubt, paid him a lot of money, and then he left, like, less than a year later, having accomplished nothing except wasted everybody's time. That wasn't it. Of course, it was more than a year. Sorry. But, you know, he left a year after Rogers arrived, having wasted everybody's time, having contributed nothing valuable to the club at all. And all you did was ask what the process that led to his hiring was. I think it's a good question. I think it's a valid question. The shareholders should be asking the people who run their organisation. This guy was hired. We paid him a lot of money. He spent a lot of money. He delivered nothing for it. How did it come about that he got the job in the first place? I don't know why that wasn't a question that they felt they could answer. Maybe there's an answer that we're not supposed to have. Maybe there's an answer they don't want us to have. But it certainly should not have shook them the way it did. And I think if people can ask a few more questions like that, then it might be a worthwhile event. Because the best thing we can do right now in terms of raising awareness of how bad these people are is to show how absolutely useless they are and worthless they are. And how logs we quip about getting what you pay for, that we're not getting a hell of a lot for what we pay for. And I think the more questions like that they get asked, and the more they squirm, because either they don't know the answers or they're unable to answer them, because the answers would be so horrifying that there would be people protesting outside Celtic Park with their pitchforks. The more the questions the better. So I hope there's I don't think it will be explosive, but I think they'll be under more pressure than they've been under in a long time. If they had managed to pull a manager out of the hat, they might have saved themselves a lot of trouble. But it's looking increasingly likely that they won't be able to announce a manager. So it'll be business as usual.
It was 2023. I asked about the process that brought the chairman's son to the club as the head of recruitment.
A scandal. It's an absolute scandal that you never got an answer to that question.
No, in 2023, we were told it was Ange Postecoglou that brought...
Oh, what?
Ange Postecoglou that never took Mark Lowell to Spurs. Ange Postecoglou that took Nick Montgomery, failed Hibs manager.
See, I've always liked that answer. I've always liked that Ange picked him. Like, so, okay, so we hired the guy to run that whole side of the club, the whole football transfer side of the club, by a guy who hadn't made a long-term commitment to staying at the club. A guy who we'd offered a new contract and who'd turned it down. But we let him rebuild the whole football department in his image, even though there was a good chance he was going to be around to see it through. I mean, there were so many holes in that story. You could have driven a tank through it. And yet I remember people at the time saying, oh, it was Angie's choice. Well, we must be all right. But it was Angie's choice. What? Are you guys mental or what? Are you guys nuts? Seriously? And people still believe that to this day. And it blows my mind that anybody believes it. It's crazy.
But that was,
what question did you ask last year then, if it wasn't that one?
Last year I asked when he realised he had to sack Martin Lowell.
Oh, was that? I knew it was a Martin Lowell question. Yes, when they realised it to sack him.
And then
I don't know why that question wasn't judged worthy of an answer. Again, it's a valid question. Maybe they hadn't sacked him. Maybe that's the answer.
That's when Addy got upset and claimed that.
Maybe Martin Lowell's still in the building somewhere doing some task that we know not what.
Daddy jumped in, claimed I had an unhealthy obsession with him and his son. But it's called scrutiny when you're surrounded by sycophants telling you how wonderful you are, how you're the best run club in Europe, and you're the envy of everyone. When somebody asks a question about the hopeless recruitment guy that lasted 4 transfer windows and has yet to surface officially in another job, so. Who knows what Mark's up to at this minute in time? We've all got our concerns.
Well, this is true. Yeah. I mean, you know what I keep thinking of? I keep thinking of Casino. Robert De Niro in Casino. When the mob tell him that he doesn't have to have a license to work in a casino. He only has to apply for a license. And whilst they're processing the application, he's allowed to work there. And the way you get around it is just to change his job title every now and again. For all we know, Mark Lowell's Celtic's head of catering. We don't know anything.
Yep.
Maybe he's in there somewhere working under another job title, doing the same job.
I just put up that comment there a while back from Dave the Rave. Now, Dave, you're outed. You're Disco Dave. We know you are. You're just trying to push buttons here. I'll be going to thank them in person for all the success and money in the bank. What good is that money in the bank to you, Dave? What's it done for you?
Or anybody else.
More to the point, what's it done for Celtic? Other than pay corporation tax.
Eric, steady. They've saved us from liquidation. Never forget that. Those big decisions that they made that saved Celtic from liquidation. So, yeah. You're the man, Dave. We should be down their hands and knees forever grateful that Celtic haven't gone into liquidation. Thanks for that.
Yeah, but here, Joe, you've got nothing good to say ever about Celtic. No. Like, I'm sure if I, like, here's a challenge for you, Joe. Say 5 good things about Celtic.
Come back to me next week.
Well, okay. And on that note, we'll finish on the AGM. So to wrap it up, predictions for next weekend. My original part of the agenda was, would Martin O'Neill be in the dugout, or would there be a new manager in the dugout for the St. Mirren game?
Really
answered this evening. So we all know that it's going to be Martin O'Neill and Sean Maloney as the old management recruitment rumbles on. It's a tough fixture, not going to be easy. Stephen Robinson's side have been up and down a bit this season, but they're a tough nut to crack, basically. So I'll go over to you first, James. How do you think we're going to fare? Do you think we'll be comfortable enough? We could win a 2-3 or 2-3-1, or do you think they're going to give us a game? Do you think it's a strange kickoff time as well, isn't it? It's 8:00 or 7:45 or something like that on a Saturday night. Have we ever done a league kickoff at that hour of the night on a Saturday?
It'll be the hardest game that we've played domestically this season so far. I think it'll be a harder game than Tynecastle. And we're going to be at our absolute best to win it. If we do win it, of course, then you can see people at the club thinking this could actually work. We could actually just leave these two in charge and this could actually work. I can see us winning it. I can see us winning it by a few goals and all. On paper, it looks like the hardest game of the season. And you know, if they're up for it, then they'll certainly not make it easy. But I have a feeling we'll get there. I think O'Neill and Maloney are pretty good at what they do, so I think we will get there.
Yeah.
I have no idea what kind of team we're going to be able to put it, but between now and then.
It's like
somebody could stub their toe for down the stairs and break both legs. It's the kind of luck that we've had.
Yeah, with the injuries, definitely something like that could happen. But it's like you said, if we go out there and we win well, it just strengthens the O'Neill Maloney combination. And that's, look, I agree with you there on that score. They are actually doing a good job when it comes, especially to our league form. They've really upped our league form and done a good job on that side of things. But the concern is, like, we could see them going as far as January. We could see them going to the end of the season. And the thing is, they could win the league for us. They could win the double or the treble for us. But that's not a long-term solution.
No.
That's the problem here. And while one of our commenters there saying stick with Martin O'Neill, yeah, we have no choice but to stick with Martin O'Neill right now because nobody is coming forward. And the longer this goes on, the more we're going to have to stick with Martin O'Neill. So how do you think it's going to go in Paisley? Would you agree with James, Joe, on the score that it's one of our toughest away fixtures this season? It's going to be tougher than Tynecastle. Would you feel that way about it?
Well, throwing back to the previous question you gave me about the name five positive things about Celtic, well, this doom-monger with the half-empty tenants glass, I suspected we were going to lose away to Hearts, and I suspected we were going to lose to Mitterland, while you happy-clapping types thought they were going to get results in those games. So, I would put together the St Mirren game and the Hibs games. So they are two pretty tough away matches, either side of 500, which is one that we don't really want to think too much about, bearing in mind the last Europa League match. But unfortunately, I'd be very pleased if we win 6 points from those two matches. But I think it's going to be very, very difficult. Four's probably a decent haul from those two matches, unfortunately, in the current circumstances, and bearing in mind the points we've dropped already this season. So, they could win against St Mirren, they could win against Hibs, but I don't see them winning both matches. Coming back from international breaks, we have not been very good. It's difficult. St Mirren away is another difficult venue. It's always a great cliche, it's a difficult place to go, but St Mirren genuinely is a difficult place to go. For some reason, the pitch, the surroundings, and Stephen Robinson's got a pretty well fired up and well drilled team. So I can't give a prediction for Saturday, but I don't see us getting 6 points from the next two away matches, and that's going to make things difficult.
Yeah, they're a hard call. Both fixtures are a hard call. I'd be inclined to agree with James. I think we'll get by in Paisley. And when we win games in Paisley, we don't seem to, you know, we win 2-0, 2-1. We never run away with it in those games. And I suppose it kind of brings me back to when the back end of COVID with Ange, when we were absolutely riddled with injuries, and we went to Paisley. And was it a nil-all draw we played out in that game, or was it 1-1?
It was nothing each just before the second lockdown. It was just after the League Cup final win against.
That's right, yeah.
Liam Shaw, I think, made his only domestic appearance. Where are they now?
Yeah. We didn't have a front line for that game practically because we'd lost Furuhashi in the League Cup final. So we were very strapped with players. And was it Owen Moffat? Did he play in that game?
Yes, that was it. He started the match, and he was the first academy player. It was the last academy player to start a league match until this season. So Dane Murray and Colby Donovan have both started league matches. But over a four-year period, Owen Moffat starting that match was the only academy graduate to start an SPFL match.
Yeah. And I would agree with the Hibs. Hibs, nearly like you were saying, James, that the St Mirren game is a tough, you know, the toughest away fixture so far this season. I don't know. Hibs is going to be very tough too. I could put them in level par in terms of toughness. So yeah, look, I think that about wraps it up for this evening, guys. Good show again. We're going to possibly have a post AGM special on Friday. So if we can gather the troops together, we'll be interested to hear what Joe, what sort of howitzers Joe fired, and what sort of reaction he got from those. So I think it'll be I think it'll be good to do one in the aftermath of the AGM, a short one, just to get a feel for what happened.
Yeah.
So until then, guys, we'll talk to you throughout the week, I'm sure, as we always do, and we'll catch up again possibly on Friday, all going well. Okay, cheers. Talk to you then.